to Hero Hype, episode 35. We are back. Yes, I know it's been a little bit of time since our last episode, but we will get into the why in just a second. So, I'm back, I'm Danya, and I'm joined by my co-host, Caitlin.
Hello.
And yeah, we're getting ready to talk about all of the shows that have come back now that the holiday season is over. So, as always, if you want to talk to us about any of the shows that have been on television, or if you want to talk about any news that's come out, you can always get hold of us on Twitter, which is at Hero Hype Podcast. You can email us on herohypepodcast@gmail.com, or you can leave a comment on this post when it goes up on hypeable.com. But let's get into why there was a delay. We did promise that we would tell you why. We're changing up the format slightly. So the delay and the reason that we're recording a sort of bumper-ish episode for all of the episodes that have been on is because we were trying to figure out exactly what we were going to do and how we were going to get around it. The reason why we're changing up the format, we're getting a lot of shows, guys. There are more and more and more and more of them starting to premiere and happen at the same time on television. And it's very difficult within the scope of an episode of this podcast to be able to do deep dive play-by-play recaps for every single episode. So instead, what you're going to get is about a 10-minute-ish discussion per show of one particular aspect that we really want to dive in deep about. But we will touch on other things if we feel that they're super important. So if you have any feedback about the new format, please let us know. We would love to hear what you think. The rest of the episode, however, will probably be about the same as usual. So you can expect brief histories, comic corners, feedback, all sorts, and news. But hopefully you'll enjoy it. We've worked really hard on figuring this out.
Yes.
Really hard, guys. And hopefully you'll find the discussion quite interesting. But we'll get straight into the actual episode now that we've explained why we're a little bit late this week. So, let's start you off with a brief history, something familiar. So this week, we're giving you a brief history of Hunter Zolomon. So, Hunter's father was a serial killer who killed his mother when she told the police. The police then killed him during a standoff. This put Hunter on the law enforcement path, and he eventually joined the FBI. After a case that led to the death of his wife's father, his wife left him, the FBI fired him, and his knee was damaged. Now stuck behind a desk, Hunter moved to Keystone City and became a profiler with the police department, the police's Department of Metahuman Hostilities. It was through his work he became friends with the current Flash, Wally West, and helped him solve numerous cases. However, he always resented being unable to go into the field due to his knee. After Gorilla Grodd left him paralyzed from the waist down, Hunter asked Wally to travel back in time to stop the accident from happening. Wally refused, not wanting to damage the time stream. Determined, Hunter broke into the Flash Museum and attempted to use the cosmic treadmill himself. This backfired and caused an explosion that allowed Hunter to alter his personal time frame, which gave him the illusion of super speed. Hunter decided that Wally refused to help him because he hadn't suffered a personal tragedy like Barry Allen had, so he targeted Wally's wife, Linda Park, to help him become a better hero. While Wally defeated Hunter and saved Linda's life, Linda miscarried their twin children, though her pregnancy would later be restored. Basically, not enough man pain. Not enough man pain, the backstory.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
So, why did we bring that up? Because, obviously, we found out that Jay Garrick's Earth One counterpart is named Hunter Zolomon, which, I don't know about Danya, but my jaw hit the floor.
Yeah, I think it was as big a kind of, oh my god, moment as Martian Manhunter. I was like, what? What? I love how they do still manage to surprise me. So, I approve.
Yes. So, shall we move on to the news?
Yes. So, we've curated for you guys our top five headlines of the week from TV news. So, I guess I'll do the Marvel one that we've got, because there wasn't a massive amount of Marvel news anyway. So, the first thing that we've got is that Netflix is developing a Daredevil spin-off series starring the Punisher. Now, this is incredibly interesting, as we have not seen the Punisher yet in action. So, yeah, it's kind of weird. At the point where we got this news as well, Jessica Jones hadn't been renewed. So everyone was kind of sitting there going, okay, you're going to jump straight into a series for a character we haven't seen yet, but you're not going to give Jessica Jones a series two. Everyone calm down, because then Netflix renewed Jessica Jones. They waited until their big panel to be able to be like, hey, yay, Jessica Jones season two. Whew. But I kind of think it speaks to how strong they must think the Punisher is as a character within the scope of Daredevil season two, even though we haven't seen it yet.
Yeah, they must be getting a lot of positive feedback internally to go ahead and make that step.
Yeah, definitely. But
which... okay, I'll trust them, because the first season of Daredevil was amazing, and they've earned a level of trust at this point.
Yeah, same. Punisher is such an interesting character, because he really... you can call some characters, like, anti-heroes, but he kind of toes that line, and that line is very, very thin for him as a character. Like, he really does fluctuate between is what he is doing right or not. And it's a very, very fine balance with him as a character, and his sort of storyline goes particularly dark. So Netflix is absolutely the right place for him. I just wonder how they're gonna spin it off. But yeah, internally, they must be really, really happy with what they've got.
And hopefully we'll end up agreeing when we see him.
Yes. Yeah. Which isn't too long. I love I think I said it on the last episode, this year is the year of the superhero, because we've got so many movies, so many TV shows, and everything in between as well. Like, more so than last year, because we've got more movies happening.
Yes. And then, hooray, more Jessica Jones, because that was amazing, and I need more in my life. All right, so shall we move on to our DC news? Because we have a significantly higher amount of DC news. So, our first bit of news is that in Legends of Tomorrow, Stephen Amell will be making another appearance, because we saw him in the first episode, kind of as the sounding board to Ray Palmer. This time he will be appearing in episode 6, which will take place in 2046, 30 years in the future, and he will be sporting a fairly iconic comic book look from The Dark Knight Returns, in which he has a whole bunch of hair and is missing his left arm. So Stephen Amell gets to play old Oliver, and they're also going to introduce Connor Hawke, his son, in that episode as well. So I think that's going to be very interesting. What about you, Donya?
I'm super into the fact that we're going to see an old Oliver Queen, and also that Stephen Amell is going to be playing him. Like, it's going to be interesting to see how they kind of make him look, how they age him up a little bit, so that there's a very distinct difference between the Oliver that we see on Arrow right now and the Oliver that we're going to see on Legends of Tomorrow. So yeah, I'm really looking forward to this, especially because of the way that they're playing with, I guess, the idea of disabilities and still being a hero on Arrow right now. The fact that he is going to be without an arm is going to be particularly interesting for an archer.
Yes. And but apparently he's still an expert marksman, even with only one arm, so...
yeah.
If anyone could find a way, it's Oliver.
Yeah, that's true. I just think, yeah, it's going to be a fascinating thing to see. I'm really looking forward to what they do with that and what other characters might be around or referenced.
Yes, because The Dark Knight Returns, Oliver blames Superman for the loss of his arm. So I wonder how this Oliver loses his arm. But I'm also interested to see how they're going to be introducing Connor Hawke, because they said he's not the son of Oliver and Sandra Hawke the way he is in the comics. And we know Oliver has a son in the current day, but his name is not Connor. So that implies that he's going to have another son. So I'm wondering if this is the child of Oliver and Felicity.
That would be quite interesting.
I don't know why his name would be Hawk if it was Felicity's child and Oliver's child, but like, they're setting those two on the marriage path. So like, that seems the most likely.
Yeah, it'll be. Yeah, I'm really looking forward to getting some answers about that. But yeah, we don't have that long to wait only a couple more episodes, so...
Yes, so that should be intriguing.
Yeah.
But in other Legends of Tomorrow news, we had more casting. Legends of Tomorrow in episode 11 is going to be going to the Old West, yes, where they are going to introduce the legendary gunslinger Jonah Hex. And they have cast Jonathan Schaich, I think, is how you say his name. That's kind of a weirdly spelled name. But, and he looks incredibly like his comic book counterpart. So
does.
It is quality casting, and they're describing Jonah Hex as a true legend of the Old West, a morally ambiguous gunslinger with a penchant for danger. Surprisingly, he knows a thing or two about time travel in the future, but is at home in the Wild West. He's been battling outlaws and gangs for a while now and advises the team to be extra careful when they arrive in the small town of Salvation. So I'm super stoked about this.
Yeah, same. Caitlin was actually, I missed this news announcement initially. Like, it completely passed me by. I did not see it. Caitlin was actually on a call with me when I saw this for the first time. And my reaction was essentially like, oh, hello. Hot damn. Like, he looks so much like Jonah Hex. It's uncanny. So it'll be interesting to see how he plays this out, because look-wise, it is there.
Yeah, and there's, I noted in my casting article that there's a comic book arc in Batman, The Return of Bruce Wayne, that Vandal Savage hires Jonah Hex to kill a time-traveling Bruce Wayne. So there's a connection between Vandal Savage and Jonah Hex.
Yeah.
So that caught my attention. I thought that was pretty interesting. So we'll see where that goes, but I'm really excited, and hopefully it will be better than the movie from a few years ago.
Yeah, that's another one of those that we kind of pretend didn't happen.
But moving on to The Flash, we've cast yet another speedster, because The Flash season 2 is the Oprah season of you get a speedster, and you get a speedster, and you get a speedster. So they have cast Allison Page as Eliza Harmon, aka Trajectory. So she's going to be Central City's first female speedster, notably, and they're describing her as having arrived in town intent on creating maximum chaos. Trajectory's antics are misinterpreted as having been perpetuated by the Flash himself. Barry thus must quickly uncover the mystery of who is the girl under the mask, as well as what is driving her mad desire for speed and destruction. And she's going to appear in episode 16. So, female speedster. Yet another speedster.
Yeah, I mean, I think you tweeted out the you get a speedster and you get a speedster thing, but I'm looking forward to seeing a female speedster. That'll be quite interesting. Like you said, they've all been very male-heavy so far.
Because they did, like, they cast Jesse Quick, but she's just been Harrison Wells' son, so she hasn't been a speedster, despite being a speedster in the comics.
Yeah, so it's kind of like, eh, but it should be interesting to actually see a female speedster in action. So, and it sounds like she's gonna cause all sorts of shenanigans for the rest of the team, so that's always fun.
This character doesn't have a very long lifespan in the comic book, so we'll hope that she lasts a little longer on The Flash, because as we will talk about in a few minutes, their treatment of their female characters has been problematic at best.
Yeah, definitely.
So, but yeah, so another speedster coming in episode 16. And then also in the Arrowverse, a couple pieces of news related to Vixen. Vixen itself is getting a second season on CW Seed. So it's going to be very similar to the first season of like 6 or 7 5-ish minute episodes. And I assume it'll probably air around the same time, because it kind of bridged the gap in the summer before the shows premiered in the fall. And they didn't say, but I would guess. And Mark Pedowitz wants to have the show, like the episodes, collected into like a full half hour thing and air them on the CW. So hopefully we will see that. So yay for more Vixen.
Yes, super excited for more Vixen now that I've actually finished the animated series. And yeah, a little bit disappointed that they're sticking with the 5-minute episode format, but you know, what are you gonna do? That's their prerogative. It worked well for them, considering they've renewed it for a season 2. It must have been quite well received, even in its current format, but I would have liked to have seen the episodes get extended to be a little bit longer, maybe even 10 minutes, you know.
I wonder if it's a budget thing.
It could be. Animation, especially traditional animation, is incredibly expensive. The skills are in such high demand because not as many people train in traditional animation anymore because the jobs just aren't there. So,
and we know the CW isn't the most loaded of the networks.
Yeah. Yeah, that's very true.
So hopefully this is a good sign of more good things to come. But also related to Vixen, we know that she's going to be appearing in an upcoming episode of Arrow, episode 15. And we got our first look photo of her in her costume and the effect that they're going to use with her totem. And it looks freaking badass. Like, that suit looks phenomenal.
Yeah, that's kind of an understatement. I'm super excited to see her make the transition to live action. And the little picture that she had with Stephen Amell was adorable. I loved that. But yeah, I'm super excited for this. I kind of really like this almost bridged version of Arrow where it's like a little bit more mysticism, but it's still quite heavily grounded in real issues in regards to they're very human. But now that they've had more crossovers with the Flash and everything with metahumans, they're bringing in slightly more mystical elements. And it's, for me, it's really, really working to expand Arrow out and just bring a new dynamic to the whole show that's kind of freshened it up a little for me. Instead of trying to get bogged down into being too gritty, too realistic, it's just, yeah, it's just uplifted it, just that tiny little bit for me.
Yeah, and Mark Pedowitz said that he would like to see this character maybe spin off onto Legends or her own show eventually, so crossing our fingers for more. So he seems very supportive of the whole thing, which I really love. So that episode will air in like 4 weeks or so.
Excellent. Ah, so exciting. Right. So let's get into what was actually on TV this week and last week as well. So we had a lot of shows come back. So they have premiered. We are in full swing of television. So how about we start with our lone Marvel show? Our poor little outlier here. So Agent Carter is back. It was really great to have Peggy back on our screens. Really missed her, actually. I kind of, like, in the back of my head, I was like, oh my god, I feel like I missed her quite a lot. But when you kind of got her on the screen, it was like, oh, I missed her even more than I was thinking I had. But we've had 3 episodes. So the premiere was 2 episodes back to back, which took it up to 2 hours. And then we had 1 episode this week. And I think what I really wanted to dive into with this is the interesting issue of social visibility. So we had some very interesting characters introduced in these first 3 episodes. And I guess what I would like to kind of talk about a little bit is just where they sit in this sort of timeline and how visible they are. So for me, the first thing that was really, really interesting was the fact that even though Peggy seems to be, I guess, slightly more respected and visible by the time we start season 2, like, her ideas are being heard a little bit more readily than perhaps they were in season 1. She's not getting the brush off as much. It was still really interesting to see how Thompson is still using her as a tool. Now, she is not sent out to Los Angeles for her particular skill set. Thompson sends her out there to use her against poor Sosa. Now, I thought that was a really interesting sort of track to take with it, because even though Peggy is incredibly competent, as we know, the fact that she's still being used in, I guess, a slightly subtler way was kind of really sinister to me, but also kind of was in keeping with what we know of those characters from season 1. So how did you feel about Peggy's assignment out to LA and how they introduced that?
Thompson is the worst.
Yeah.
And he has continued to get awful and more awful as the episodes have gone. Like, he go, like, it's telling that he gets the call while Peggy is interrogating Dottie and being competent and being the only one that Dottie would respond to. And then is like, I can't let her show me up, essentially. And knows it's also a chance to get under Soza's skin. So just sends her out. Like, he's so petty.
Yeah, but it kind of... I thought that was a really interesting sort of aspect to kind of play up. But obviously she kind of, like, she lands in LA and she basically just starts really kind of taking everything in her stride and really knuckling down the way that Peggy always does. And the thing is that she gets everything in motion. She starts really digging into all of these leads about, it's Isodyne, isn't it? And
mm-hmm.
Yeah. And she just does as Peggy does, so... I thought it was just really interesting that despite how society tries to kind of pigeonhole her into certain categories, she still always rises above that. She tends to find her way or claw her way back out just through being who she is. And yeah, it just kind of reinforced that some of the characters are still the same as we knew them from season one, and they're still just as terrible.
Yeah, but... props to Peggy for taking it in stride, like, when she realizes that Soza didn't ask for her.
Yeah.
Like, ooh, that was hard, but Peggy's the best.
Mm.
So, you know, screw Thompson, and Peggy's gonna be amazing.
Yeah. But she doesn't really need to... I mean, the stuff between her and Soza was ever so slightly awkward, because they were still in this kind of... Peggy's obviously... found herself in a place where she's ready to move on. We got that from the end of season one. So some of her interactions with Soza were a little bit awkward, but Soza has kind of moved on as well. He's not waiting around for Peggy, basically. But Peggy kind of... she meets someone new anyway. She meets a character called Wilkes, who I fell immediately in love with, but... considering the time, also falls into this very interesting place of not necessarily being taken seriously or having the visibility that he deserves because of the color of his skin.
Yeah, so, there's that scene in the diner where the guy behind the counter thinks that he's harassing Peggy.
Yeah, so I just thought it was really interesting how he was introduced. I actually, when we got through the premiere, I was like, wow, are they actually killing him off this soon? Like, that seemed a little bit jarring for me. I was like, okay, that's... you've made some really interesting... you've set him up in a really interesting way, and now you're just kind of cutting that short. But no, it... the episode that we got this week, we find out that the that this sort of explosion that's triggered kind of makes him invisible. he's not visible, you can't see him. And it was just kind of like one of those things where it was like, wow, okay, way to be really on the nose with the message that you're sending across based on who he is and the time period that this is set in. Like, I thought, wow, that's one way to, like, really push that message out.
And it takes the white characters to make him seen and heard again.
Exactly. And I was thought, wow, like, that's a really interesting thing to kind of, like, go with here. But I thought it was really well executed. It wasn't done in a way that felt disingenuous or kind of disrespectful to the actual characters. It kind of fit in really well with the narrative that they're playing with. So, and the thing is that as a character, he stands quite strongly against Peggy as well. Like, they gel together really, really well. So I find myself really enjoying him and kind of seeing him not lose that almost sunny disposition in the face of very strong discrimination in certain parts. Like you said, that diner scene was so, so well done. And yet, you look at the person that he is, and he's just, his sense of character was so strong. So I really liked him. I'm really glad he's not dead.
Yeah. I feel like Peggy was drawing some parallels between him and Steve at some point, because she was comparing him, saying, you know, he's a good man who is just helping because it's the right thing to do, which was very much her relationship with Steve as well.
Yeah. I just really liked him. He's right in the middle as well. Because he's right in the middle of this whole plot with Aes Sedain Energy and some of the other characters we were introduced to. But it's just, he's intelligent, he's quite frank, and he's willing to undertake enormous risks for Peggy without actually being part of that same world necessarily. And he doesn't need to. And it's just, they've set him up as a really strong character right out of the gate. And it'll be, I'm really looking forward to seeing how they have him climb out of what is almost expected of him. What he's stereotyped as, the same way that Peggy fought and riled against that in season one. Like, I think it'll be a really interesting character arc for him through season two, if that's the direction that they go with it.
Agreed. I think there's a lot of potential for this character in the time period that they're exploring is going to give a lot of room for growth. And he and Peggy have that kind of look down upon by the society string in common, which is something that, like, Sosa could never quite relate to her on that level with.
Yeah, absolutely. Another character that we're introduced to in this episode is Whitney Frost. And she is almost like a polar opposite of Wilkes for me. Like, there are some similarities between them in that they are mercilessly judged by the society that they live in because of who they are. So she is an actress and she has set up this public persona that she is judged by and dismissed by because she is essentially a pretty face of sorts. But underlying that, she has an unbelievable intelligence. So it was just very interesting that was the kind of, it's kind of the persona she's almost set up for herself to kind of, I guess, in the background, be able to do what she needs to. So she is a brilliant scientist that is hiding her true identity underneath that, and she's using it like a smoke and mirrors kind of thing to be able to get away with and explore things behind the scenes. So I thought, like, the way that they were going with that, the way that they're playing that, was so cool, because she's using society's expectations of her against society and against everyone, like, kind of, yeah, I guess, watching her.
And I think it's really telling then that when she gets infected with the zero matter, that it's cracking in her face.
Yeah.
Because the face is like her facade, it's her disguise to the world. And then the very thing that's her disguise is what's cracking.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's basically taking away the one thing that she set up to protect herself. And I was just like, oh, this is, like, straight out of the gate, Agent Carter came back and it came back strong. But I thought it played with some really interesting narrative choices that they've set up between Peggy, Wilkes, and Frost in these first three episodes that will be really interesting to see how they kind of thread that out through the remainder of the season. So I'm really looking forward to the rest of season two.
I was a little worried they wouldn't be able to live up to season one, and they completely blew my expectations out of the water. Yeah. So I don't know why I ever doubted Peggy.
Don't doubt. Never doubt Peggy. Ever.
All right. And now we have a bunch of DC shows to hit. So shall we start with Supergirl?
Yeah.
We have thoughts about when we'll start with. The first episode that aired was Childish Things, which looked at Wynn and his relationship with his father, and his father breaks out of prison and kind of gives us some more insight into why he turned out the way he did. And the next episode looks at the White Martian coming in, and Wynn is reacting to Kara's spurning his advances, essentially, in the previous episode. So I guess, did we think that Childish Things did good things for his character.
Now, here's the thing, is that I thought Childish Things was incredibly interesting for Wynn's character. It set him up as someone that was very flawed, very interesting, but also it explained a lot about how he ended up the way that he did. Like, I felt very conflicted about him through the entire episode. I was like, I understand, but then he would do some things where I was like, I don't know what you're doing, and I'm not sure that I like it. His attitude towards Kara particularly is something that still doesn't sit right with me. And in both of these episodes, so going across the two of them, I understand partially why he decided to tell Kara about his feelings for her. Because when you try to bottle that up and bury it down, it's very difficult to get over those feelings. But telling them and pushing the expectation on them for almost guiding the way that you should be feeling, or even expecting them to react in a certain way, was really unfair of him. Because Kara has kind of, through her actions, made it very obvious that she is not romantically attracted to him, that they are just friends. And she confirmed that as well. But then when we move on to the next episode and Wynn is being completely vindictive about the fact that Kara has a very conscious choice to be able to be like, no, look, I don't feel about you that way, but I do still really like you as a friend. And he starts kind of being really vicious about it. I swung right back around to be like, whoa, hold on a second. I was starting to kind of understand you from certain angles and certain aspects, and you've literally just undone that all in the span of like a couple of sentences. So...
yeah, I, for the most part through the first episode, I was thinking, okay, this is actually very interesting for Wynn. This is giving us more insight into him, and his deepest fear is becoming like his father, and that this guy really is psychotic, essentially. And so he comes from a bad place and has been trying to overcome that. And I even wondered in the recap that I wrote whether part of his motivation for helping Kara to be Supergirl is kind of to make up for things his father's done, and maybe like ahead of time anything that he might do, like trying to put more good in the world to make up for anything that his family has done. So I found that very interesting. But then the lesson that he took from it, like, left me with some very mixed feelings, because he is essentially putting the burden on Kara, who has made it very clear that she doesn't want it. And he's done it to make himself feel better, which I feel like if you truly love somebody, that's not what you do. So that left me a little uncomfortable, but I was still feeling kind of sympathetic toward him. And then I was like, okay, based on how he reacts from here will shape how I feel about him. And then the fact that he was basically avoiding her after that, just saying, give me space, was like, it's not like she broke up with you, you know, like it felt like, it didn't feel like a particularly good reaction, and it left a sour taste in my mouth with him. And I'm back on the anti-Wynn wagon.
Yeah, I'm basically in the same place. I'm kind of like, he had so much potential to be able to get past this without potentially damaging that relationship, but he's being a little bit selfish and unfair to Kara in the respect of, like, he's expecting so much from her that, yeah, I'm kind of, I've literally come back around full circle again. I was like, oh, this is starting to move in a really interesting direction. I'm kind of liking the way that they're, like, no character is perfect. Every character is going to have flaws and so on. But I think he built it up so much in his mind, like how he wanted it to work out, what he wanted this to do, what he wanted it to mean, that it was kind of like when it all kind of came out from underneath him, he started like regressing. And I thought, oh, he could move past this in a really good way, a really good, a really healthy way, and he just isn't right now. So I am hoping that as Kara moves on in a romantic way with Kat's son, that it may course correct, but I'm not holding my breath.
So I saw the most amazing theory on Tumblr about Wynn that was kind of because his father kept repeating, "You're the best thing I ever made," that Wynn is like a cyborg or something.
Oh, that would be really sinister. Also kind of interesting. We'll have to look out for clues to see if there are any other clues that could be sort of on the money.
Yeah, I just thought that was kind of interesting because he did keep saying, like, "You're the greatest thing I ever made," which is, you know, he's Toy Man, so he makes toys, but at the same time, like, it's a weird thing to be like, "I made you."
Yeah, so that could also be because Toy Man is a little bit, he's got a screw loose somewhere.
But yeah, so I saw that theory and I was like, I kind of adore this. I don't know if it's real, if it ends up being right, but I thought it was kind of fun. But I am currently on the anti-Win bandwagon at the moment.
I think he still has enough time to turn it around, but right now I think it's a little bit like, they need to be particularly careful with where they go with this, because there's only so much you're going to be able to take of it before you kind of go, okay, that's it. He keeps swinging from one side to the other, so.
Yes. But on the other side, we had some more exploration of Jean, and we even got to see Mars, which looked so good. Like, hello, television budget, and you went to Mars. Matt Damon wasn't there, but it was still pretty amazing.
Yeah, I'm kind of giving them more benefit of the doubt over Red Tornado now that I'm seeing more of, like, what where their actual budget went.
Yeah.
I was like, wow, it's gone on Jean and it's gone on Mars, so I'm kind of, you know what, I can kind of live with the tacky Power Rangers.
Yeah, it went to like those dozens and dozens of other Martians,
yeah,
and the white Martian, and like the obvious choreography going on with like those amazing fights with Supergirl and Jean and the white Martian, especially the one in the desert. The one in the DEO was super cool too, because the one that was the white Martian was like hitting walls like almost like Spider-Man. Like, yeah. It looked so freaking cool. So, but we got basically Jean telling Alex in this really emotional scene of what happened to his people, that the white Martians had rounded them up. They came up from under the earth with all their new technology, and they basically rounded up all the green Martians and put them in camps, and basically was like a Holocaust. They separated the men from the women and children and put the men in labor and murdered the women and children. And Jean lost his wife and two children. And he is still excessively traumatized by that, and who can blame him?
Yeah, I was going to be like, understandably so.
Yeah, so that was such an amazing scene with him and Alex.
Yeah, it was phenomenal. Like, definitely one of the highlights. And I like that they're not shying away from how horrific the Green Martians versus White Martian culture is like on Mars. Like, it's, you know, it's obviously based a lot in, especially because it's a Holocaust, like, it's based a lot and grounded a lot in things that have happened in our own history, but I have a lot of respect for the fact that they showed just how horrific that is. They did not shy away from showing how emotionally devastating that was, but they did it in such a sensitive way that I have a lot of respect for how they've approached this, and it'll be, I think, seeing it playing out over the rest of the season, if they keep teasing out bits and pieces of it, will be, I hope they continue to treat it as well as they did in this episode, basically.
Agreed. And I loved that, it was so fascinating to watch Jean going from being suicidal to vengeful during the fight. He was initially willing to just let himself be killed and end everything, but then Supergirl comes in and helps, and they get the upper hand, and he is prepared to kill the thing, and she has to talk him down, and she is probably the only one that could have talked him down, because she's the only other one, really, who knows what it's like to be among the last of your race.
Yeah, yeah. It was just so sensitively handled and so well done. Like, I just... so much kudos for the fact that they went there with bringing Martian Manhunter in, and they're doing really great things with this storyline so far, so...
And I'm just loving seeing the way his relationship is developing with Alex and Kara, that... Yeah. You know, he says any man would be proud to call you his daughters, and Kara hugs him.
I know.
And he takes it and then kind of gruffly, okay, that's enough.
Yeah.
He can't let anyone see because he has his disguise to keep up. But yeah. I really love the way that relationship is progressing. Like, they're definitely becoming this little family, which yeah. I love.
I love it too. I think it's great. It's just another aspect of the family theme of Supergirl. Found family and... blood family. So yeah. I love that they keep exploring that in different ways.
Yeah. So I feel like Supergirl has really found its rhythm and is just kicking butt.
Yeah.
I'm loving it so much.
Absolutely. So. Week on week, it's just, it's improving so much, and you just don't think that it can get any better than it was. And you're just like, I'm transfixed with the whole show. I'm eagerly anticipating each episode, so.
Yes. So, way to go, Supergirl. We love it. Okay, we've got the Arrowverse. 3 shows. So, let's start with The Flash, and this one's not going to be particularly positive, because we saw in these 2 episodes, what we wanted to focus on was the way Barry and Patty's relationship was handled, and how everything is awful, and this is the worst use of the trope ever, and is stupid, and needs to go away. But basically, Barry is like, I'm gonna tell Patty I'm the Flash. Like, Iris is like, hey, I hated that you kept this from me, and if you are gonna be serious with her, you need to tell her. He's like, yeah, I'm gonna do it. And Cisco's like, yeah, do it. She's a badass. Love it. And then Harrison Wells, of all people that Barry is gonna take his advice from, is like, you can't tell her because it will put her in danger. Which, no, it won't. But Barry, despite being a scientist, doesn't realize that this logic doesn't work and decides not to tell her. And as things go, she breaks up with him and is like, I'm leaving. And
which, in...
I don't blame her.
Yeah, I was going to say, with respect to Patty being basically like, okay, cool, we're done. Like, the fact that she realizes... she's a good detective. Of course she was going to realize that he's keeping something from her. And of course she was going to put it together eventually, because she's smart. She, like, this is her job. This is her whole livelihood, to be able to piece together and figure out cases. And the fact that she's basically like, okay, I'm done. I'm gonna leave. I mean, I hate this trope, especially because Patty is so competent and is such a good cop, and it was, the dynamic between Barry and Patty was working out so well. They complemented each other in a great way. They brought out each other's strengths. They kind of played them up, and they had each other's backs, and I thought it was such a beautiful relationship that had continuing potential. But she is incredibly competent on her own as a character. The fact that she was kept in the dark for so long was more of a danger to her than knowing. This whole idea of someone who's important to your life knowing your secret identity being what will put them in trouble is complete crap. Because it's not about what that person does or doesn't know, it's what your enemy knows. If your enemy knows your identity, for example, or has seen you interacting with a person that you are close to, or that you have close ties to, or sees that you are willing to risk more to protect them, etc., etc., they're going to use that against you, whether or not the person in question knows your true identity or not. It is the stupidest thing. And Patty not having all of the information there in order to make informed decisions about protecting herself and taking precautions to protect herself put her in more danger than her actually, like, not, I don't know. It's just the stupidest trope. I hate it. I hate it so much. If someone is important to you, tell them. Tell them the truth. Because the lying and the secretiveness is more of a danger to them than anything else. Bottom line, that's it.
Exactly. And then kind of to add insult to injury, like after she's figured it out, Barry still refuses to acknowledge it. And she even says, tell me and I'll stay. Like, all you have to do is acknowledge that I was right and I will stay. And he can't. And this is the first time I've actually been mad at Barry in this show. Like, he was being stupid.
Yeah.
And it infuriates me because I thought that the writers had figured out with Iris and the backlash that they got over how they treated Iris not finding out for so long that they wouldn't go there again. And then they did. So it's clear a lesson was not learned about the handling of female characters in this show. And the show is already a sausage fest. Like, we know that. And there are, like, two main characters who are female, and they barely ever speak to each other. And Patty could have been a third to be involved and be helpful. And I think she would have been a really great addition to the cast and adding another female voice that is so desperately needed on this show. So
they squandered it. They absolutely squandered it.
I don't understand why they bothered to introduce her if they were just gonna not use her like the way they did, or they weren't gonna use her for a longer period of time, because, you know, obviously she was there to be like the mid-game before West Allen becomes canon or whatever, and whatever, because that's how it is in the comics. I don't really care. I don't do really ship a lot on this show. But Iris wasn't going to go out with Barry at this point, whether he was single or not, because she was still grieving Eddie. So, like, if you're going to introduce a new partner for Barry at this time, like, go with it and stick with it for a while.
Yeah.
And it felt like she really got shafted, and there was a lot of potential for that character, and it drove me up the wall how she was treated.
Yeah, same. Because I'm still interested in more of her story. I think she was such a great addition to the cast, and she had so much to bring to the table, and it's just fizzled out into nothing, and I'm so disappointed. I'm seriously disappointed. Because we've been singing the praises of Barry and Patty and their interactions and their chemistry and how they work together up until this point, and these two episodes basically undid all of that amazing hard work that they put into in the first part of the season. And now it just kind of feels like it was just pushing Barry into a specific corner, that they wanted to use Patty as a tool to get him there, which is basically him being so focused on Zoom because he loses everything, sort of, kind of. It's just really stupid, basically, and I don't like the way that they've used Patty to kind of push Barry into being more focused on Zoom. Like, it's just, I don't like it. I think it's stupid.
And I think you could argue that that arc was an instance of Barry self-sabotaging himself in a way that was sort of making the video that Eobard Thawne as Wells left him at the beginning of the season, like, come true. But I don't feel like the narrative portrayed it that way. Like, it never to me felt like it was ever saying Barry is in the wrong here.
Yeah.
And if there had been some indication that he's being stubborn and not thinking straight, I could have been like, okay, they're saying he's self-sabotaging at this point, and he has ruined this really fantastic relationship that he had in his quest to get after Zoom. And I think that could have been interesting and could have opened the door for her to come back, or, you know, him to do some self-reflection. But I just don't feel like the narrative was saying that he was ever wrong. And that, I think, is problematic, because he was straight up the one in the wrong at this point.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Like, Barry messed up, and he messed up big time here, and I'm really disappointed in him as a character, and I'm really disappointed in the show as well, because a character that I was really enjoying the arc of and the motivations and the kind of potential that they had is now gone. That's it. It's done. And I feel like I almost got whiplash from it as well. And I'm just It's the first time I've been really disappointed in The Flash. Like, really disappointed. And I'm hoping that they manage to find a way to turn it around because it kind of stings.
Yeah, I agree. And I feel like my frustration with that kind of overshadowed how good the stuff with the Reverse Flash coming back was. Like, even though the time travel explanation made my head hurt, I thought the way Barry was wrestling with Thawne as Thawne showing up, like, was really fascinating. And I really liked seeing him grapple with that and eventually have to let him go for Cisco. But I feel like my disappointment with the way Patty was being sent off overshadowed what I thought was a pretty strong story there.
Yeah, absolutely agreed with that. It kind of that episode was really strong otherwise, and it just undercut it. It undercut how well written, well acted, and well done the remainder of the episode was because this plot was so convoluted. But hey, it is what it is. And hopefully they'll manage to turn it around. There's still enough episodes till the end of the season that they could do something really interesting with the rest and potentially get me back on board. But for now, I'm kind of like, I'm done. I need this trope to die in everything.
Yeah, it's doesn't make sense and needs to go away. But let's move on to Arrow. So, Arrow, we kind of wanted to think about how the show is approaching Felicity's injury. So, in the mid-season premiere, Oliver basically completely regresses to his season one ways where he's he's looking for Damian Dark and he's pushing people off buildings and he's completely off the rails to go after Damian Dark. He's off the rails and he won't go see Felicity like at all, and which her mother is kind of appalled at, and I kind of agree.
We find out
pretty early on that she's alive, and I was like told you so. but she spends most of this episode like in surgery, so we don't really spend much time with her. But the end up is that she has irreparable damage to her spinal cord, so she's never going to walk again. I think we know that's not true, because as Oliver says at the end of this week's episode, they live in a world where people come back from the dead and people have superpowers and can fly and all that. So finding a way to fix a spinal cord injury should be possible. But for a while, Felicity's going to be stuck in a wheelchair. And it takes Oliver finally visiting Felicity and her, like, one of her first questions to him is, like, have you gone off the rails, basically?
Yeah.
Like, she knows him that well. Like, yeah. She's like, please don't tell me that you regressed. And he can't really reply.
Yeah.
Because, yes, he has. But they have this really beautiful scene where, you know, she says that she's basically afraid that he was going to leave her when he found out that she wasn't going to walk again. And he puts the ring back on her finger and it's really sweet. And
yeah,
I really have enjoyed like their relationship as they've been developing it this season. It's felt a lot more organic and heartfelt. And it really shows that Oliver needs that connection to his loved ones to stay on the rails. He has the potential to fall off so easily if somebody he cares about is targeted or is hurt. And it doesn't take much for him. Which,
yeah,
it's interesting. Like, his new self is definitely, like, who he is aspiring to be, but that old Oliver is just under the surface still.
Yeah. I was so ready at one point to take back my most improved award for him. I was like, no, you don't deserve this. No, I'm taking it back. And then it kind of turned back around. It was a very temporary regression back into an Oliver who puts revenge and vengeance above all else. And I feel like he's come along so far since then, especially leaps and bounds in this season particularly, that I'm glad that it was just a kind of a heightened emotional response to what happened, because I think it was driven a lot from fear, because obviously Felicity's physical state was unknown at certain points in this, and Oliver just kind of lost it. And I think part of that is probably from a deep-rooted fear based on how much Felicity has come to mean to him. Like, they're ready to, you know, build their life together. They're at that point where they're ready to be forever for each other. And I think it was, as much as I was kind of like, Oliver, no, no, don't regress, please don't go back to season one, Oliver. I think that it also did make a little bit of sense that he is trying so hard to do better, to be the change that he wants to see in his own city, and to be able to operate in the light. And that it's such a hard battle for him to get to that and continue to be that was really, it was really fascinating, especially when it was Felicity basically being like, okay, no, honey, no, please don't.
Yeah, and he gets it from other people in the episode, like Diggle tells him, you know, don't lose what Felicity fell in love with. And Laurel is calling him out on his BS, which she does quite frequently and is like my favorite thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
But really, it takes hearing from Felicity because, you know, he cares about her so much. And she's, you know, the one that was hurt. So he needs to hear from her specifically. And that's what gets him back on. So it just shows how important she is to him and his humanity.
Yeah, absolutely.
Though we had a flash forward at the end of this episode, which teased the grave again.
Yeah.
And it showed Oliver getting in the car. Felicity's in the back seat. Neither of them are wearing their rings and they're sitting very far apart.
Yeah.
And Felicity tells him he needs to kill the son of a bitch. And I got very worried for Diggle.
Oh, no.
That was, like, my first thought was, oh, God, I hope it's not Diggle. Like, I still think that it's Lance, but that scene in particular got me worried about Diggle.
Oh, no, don't say that. No.
I will be so mad if they kill Diggle.
Yeah, same. I don't know. No, I'm going to go straight into denial mode. No. But, you know, the response, particularly from Felicity, was so strong there that I could very likely see that being the case.
Yeah. And clearly something has happened that they're not wearing their rings and they are not close to each other at all. It looks very much like they've broken up, which, I mean, that happens with couples in shows, like the couples that are going to be like the end game couples. Like they break them up all the time.
It's freaking Ross and Rachel syndrome. And it's basically one of those other tropes that I think needs to die. But, you know, they get their drama where they get their drama.
Because I don't think at this point that Laurel and Oliver are ever going to get together.
No.
In this show. Like, they've written them to that point that I don't think they will ever get together. I think that Felicity and Oliver is the end game relationship for this show.
Yeah, and I think if they do try and push for Oliver and Laurel, as amazing as that relationship is in the comics, it is literally going to be forcing an issue.
Like, yeah, it doesn't work on this show. Like,
no. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. Those universes can exist independently of each other and still be as good and as interesting and as beautiful as they are. But I think if they try and push the show in that direction too much, that it's not going to feel right. It's not going to sit right. It's going to...
Yeah. I feel like they've just written those two characters as having far too much baggage with each other to ever be able to be a functional relationship. That I think they will be a very successful partnership in the field. So they can be the Black Canary and Green Arrow, but I don't think they can be the Oliver Queen and Laurel Lance
of
the comics.
Absolutely. Agreed.
And I imagine that they intended those two to be their romance for the end, and then they kind of saw that the actors maybe didn't have the best chemistry, and then Felicity came in, and things shifted. But I'm not trying to be, like, shippy on here, but I just, the way I see that they're writing it, and from all the other shows of romances that I've seen, it feels very much like they are treating these two as their, like, destination romance. And this is just going to be, like, a bump in the road for them, I imagine.
Yeah, yeah. I think we'll get back on track by the end of the season, I think. But it'll be, I guess we'll have to see where we go when we come to the actual who's in the grave moment.
Yes, I'm kind of dreading it. But yes. The person who we told you was not in the grave, and we continued saying was not in the grave, was not in the grave. It was Felicity, because she's paralyzed. And our second episode this week showed us how she was responding. Basically, some time had passed. She was back in the loft and was trying to kind of come to terms with her new life. And she ends up seeing her old goth self, like, as a hallucination. And it's kind of, her old self is kind of poking and prodding every vulnerability and weakness she's feeling as a result of the injury. And Felicity really struggles with it. And she accidentally, like, messes up when they try to push her to get back to working. And Oliver is not mad. Diggle is fine, because she ends up separating the two of them on accident. And no one's mad. Oliver's like, I'm sorry we pushed you. You said you weren't ready. And I pushed you, so I'm sorry. And Felicity's just like, I can't do this. I can never be part of the team again. And gets prodded and prodded by her old self, which I thought was a really interesting way for her to kind of deal with all these feelings of vulnerability. What about you?
I loved the visual kind of representation of Felicity's struggle. I thought it was such a great way to showcase that, basically pitting her against her old self. And the thing is that inside, there's no one who's going to know her insecurities better than herself and be able to play on them and exploit them as well as herself. And the fact that they visualized that with an older version of herself that she's maybe not the proudest of that period of time, and it pushing her to be in a better place, I thought visually was just, it was really clever. And I love that they employed that tactic. So I kind of thought that, you know, obviously this isn't going to be an easy thing to get used to. It is a huge lifestyle adjustment for her. In regard to her skills, they're still there, but she's almost got a mental block to it. And being able to see her kind of, I guess, overcome that is going to be a really, really great arc for her for the rest of the season, because it's something that for the most part is going to be an internal struggle that, yeah, she can get support from the people around her, but for the most part it's down to her how she decides to take control of her life again and her agency in respect to her own body, her own mind, and how she fits in with the rest of the team.
Yeah, and I know I saw some unhappy responses to Felicity being in the wheelchair, but I feel like this is actually good for her, because it keeps her, it gives her her own arc, and it also gives her and Oliver a couple arc. Like, they as a couple have to figure out how to deal with this new way of life, because Oliver's life is definitely impacted because he has to do more things for her, that she, like, he was carrying her down the stairs and everything. So they're gonna have to figure it out as a couple. But at the same time, Felicity's story isn't just rooted in her relationship, it's rooted in her own overcoming this trauma and becoming stronger for it and overcoming her past, essentially, which I think is really good. And last season, she really didn't have much of an arc outside of her on-again, off-again thing with Oliver. And now she really gets her own thing, which I think is good. And I'm happy to see.
Yeah, and not only that, there's something to be said about the competency of a character not necessarily being compromised by the fact that she now has a physical disability. She is still going to be as useful to the team, regardless of whether she is able to stand on two legs or not. Like, that's irrelevant. But I think the adjustment to losing, to not being able-bodied anymore, that is a really interesting thing, because people do suffer injuries like this all the time, whether it's a physical disability like becoming paralyzed, or whether it's like losing your sight or something like that, and there's a huge lifestyle adjustment there, but it doesn't make her any less competent. So I think that it's a really interesting thing that they're going to be playing with, that she in her own mind feels like she's potentially lost a part of herself, but I think it's going to be all about realizing that she hasn't lost anything at all. It's just a new way of looking at things. And yeah, I don't know. It's just going to be, so far I'm happy with the way that they've been dealing with it. I just hope that they continue to deal with it as well as they have so far. Obviously, it's only been one episode, but yeah.
And just side note, Felicity finally gets a code name.
Yes.
Her code name is Overwatch, which I think was a shout out to Mark Guggenheim's novel that he released that was called Overwatch.
Yeah.
But Oliver has the quip, like, I was going to go with Oracle, but it was already taken.
Yeah, which kind of sealed our sort of theory that the reason that they weren't going with Oracle is because they weren't able to get the clearance for it from DC, probably.
Yeah, it was very meta that was like, this was the plan, we weren't allowed to do it. But then, like, on an in-show level, I'm like, does that mean there is an Oracle in this world?
Oh, well, that would be the implication, wouldn't it?
But I thought that was kind of great because they clearly heard people being like, she's becoming Oracle. They're like, we can't use it.
Yeah.
But now Felicity's got her own code name and she ends up overcoming her fear. She basically says, you know, my old self was just too angry. And considering her situation with having a criminal father and a mother that it took her a very long time to like reconcile with, and she felt isolated and had a boyfriend that turned out to be a criminal and who quote unquote died. And of course she was angry. So she kind of gets over that. So. But yeah, so they're handling this so far pretty well.
Yeah,
but
agreed.
Let's move on to our brand new show, Legends of Tomorrow. So what we're kind of interested in is that Legends really seems to have this intriguing contradiction in itself about fate and whether it can or can't be changed. Because kind of the core conceit of Legends is that fate can be changed, because otherwise what's the point of Rip stealing a ship and going back in time and collecting this group of ragtag people to beat Vandal Savage and stop him from killing his family. Like, so it seems like the core idea is that yes, it can be. And you have certain characters, like the reason they stay on when they find out that Rip has been lying to them, that they want to change their fates because Rip says, you know, I picked you because you were all completely pointless to the time stream and you made no echoes or whatever. So they're all like, well, why don't we change our fates? So if we beat Vandal Savage, we are going to become the legends you were talking about. So on the one hand, the show is very much like, yes, change your fate. But then at the same time, it's got the Hawks and their story of like inevitability of each being reincarnated and finding each other and falling in love and all this. And it's kind of this weird idea of, can it be changed? You know, there are fixed points in time that cannot be changed, like the Professor Boardsman's death. That's a fixed point that couldn't be changed. And there are other points that can't be changed, but others can. And it's kind of, there's a contradiction there. And I feel like it's probably intentional to some degree. And I know Donya has thoughts.
I have a lot of thoughts, mostly about Carter and how absolutely reprehensible I found him. I hated him. Like, from pretty much the first time he opened his mouth, I was like, nope, we're done. I'm over you within seconds. And I just hated this idea that even if he and Kendra are destined for each other, that doesn't mean that you have the right to continually push and poke and prod at her and back her into a corner and almost Stockholm syndrome her into accepting the fact that she needs to be in love. Like, the emotional trauma that she goes through across these two episodes with meeting her past son and having to come to terms with that, and the emotional whiplash that she gets going back and forth. No wonder she's a complete and utter mess across these two episodes. It was horrific for me, and I hated the way that Carter kept pushing her. She was basically like, look, two odd months ago I was still working in a coffee shop. Can you just give me some time to come to terms with the fact that I've had 206 lives, past lives, over, you know, different time frames, and you know, let me come to terms with this and get to where we need to be in my own time. The fact that he keeps like pushing her into, we're inevitable, we are destiny, you have to love me because we're destined to love each other. And I was just like, I really love within, and this is ridiculous, within fan fiction, for example, I love the idea of exploring this soulmate kind of trope, but not in the respect of, you know, instant love, you're destined for each other, and that's it. It's so easy to fall straight into it, and everyone is like, yes, you have to love each other because that's just the way that it is. My whole thing with it is I love exploring the fact that even if you are destined for each other, do you still have the ability of choosing for yourself whether or not you move forward with it? Can you still have agency when it comes to that? Can you still choose for yourself who you love and what you do with your life, even though you've got someone harping over your shoulder that you need to accept them? And when Carter goes for that kiss and she's like, well, what the hell are you doing? I wanted to punch Carter so much. And you know the most interesting thing that Carter did for this and this inevitability and destiny storyline was die. It is the most interesting thing that he did across the two episodes for me, because now it puts a very tragic spin on it, because you have to assume that Kendra will survive through the season, and that she has now regained some of her memories of some of their past lives. How does she move on from that? Can she now make a life for herself without Carter being intertwined in her destiny, and can she be happy and content with that? That is a far more interesting story for me than this almost really kind of creepy pursual of and manipulation of Carter into getting Kendra into a place where he gets what he wants. And I just think that the direction, the track that this has changed up onto is far more interesting for me for the rest of Legends of Tomorrow. But basically, TLDR, the best thing Carter did was die.
And I'm just going to say, they fridged a dude, praise.
Yeah.
yeah, I mean, I feel like there was all this, you can't change destiny because at the end, Kendra is like, I just realized that I do have feelings for him and I didn't get to tell him. And it's a little icky when you think about it, the way Johnny's been talking about. But then, really, her fate has been changed because she gets to, quote unquote, move forward in a way that it's her own life, and she's gonna have to rely on the rest of the team instead of Carter. She's gonna have to, you know, figure out what she wants and if she can have feelings for other people and all that kind of stuff. So I think in some ways, by killing Carter, they kind of killed the idea of this inevitability of fate, because he kind of represented that.
Yeah, there is a beautiful poem that is called, I think it's 25 Lives, and it's Hui Lim who wrote it, and it was changed into this really beautiful comic book. And it's a really interesting exploration about intertwining destinies and lifetimes, and being destined to meet the same person in different lifetimes, but how that changes. Like, it's not inevitable that in every lifetime they are desperately in love, and that's the way that it will be at all times. And it's just a really interesting poem. I will link to it. And I think it lends a really great sort of potential to a destiny narrative in regard to two souls or three souls being intertwined across universes. And I think, yeah, I think what they're doing right now, or the way that they could go with this right now, is far more interesting for me, because I don't know, I just like the fact that everything is now back in her hands in regard to how she can live out the rest of this lifetime without having this weight, this expectation over her, hanging over her. And the fact that, you know, not only was Carter expecting her to just fall in line pretty much with what this destiny means, but her former son, and I mean former as in from her former lifetime, not former as in because he's dead as well. You know, her son. Yeah, awkward. Yeah, her son from a previous lifetime was expecting that that was the way that it would go. You know, Rip even expects it to a certain extent, you know, and that's removed now. So it just, it opens up the narrative of the Hawkman and Vandal Savage, the Hawkman, Hawkwoman, and Vandal Savage kind of storyline is just, yeah, far more interesting for me now.
I agree. So, kind of overall thoughts of Legends, I personally found it to be, like, the most comic booky thing I've ever seen, and I loved it. I just found it so charming in its, in how unapologetic it is about being ridiculously comic booky. And yeah. I enjoyed the hell out of the first two episodes.
There was a lot that I loved about it. I really loved Sarah, and I really loved, oh my god, I really loved Leonard Snart. I think he's just, he catapulted pretty much immediately to being one of my favorite characters, like, straight away, almost immediately upon watching the series. I was like, oh god, I'm spiraling, send help. But it's just kind of one of those things where I was like, oh, there were certain aspects of it that kind of bothered me. But by the time the second episode wrapped up, they had figured it out. I had genuine and serious problems about the fact that the two characters of color on this show had their agent, or were having their agency taken away from them. Both in regard to, as I've already spoken about, Kendra and her storyline of inevitable destiny weighing on her. And also the fact that Martin Stein drugged and dragged Jax to the future without, even though he said no. Like, that, the implications there were very, very, very bad for me. That I was very uncomfortable with it. The fact that his agency was stripped away, and the fact that it was both people of color on this show, like, that did not sit well with me. But obviously by the end of the second episode, they removed one by way of killing Carter, and the other allowed Jax to be able to make an informed decision about whether or not he wanted to continue on with their mission. So, you know, it did resolve it, but from the first part of the pilot episode, I was like, the premiere episode, pilot episode, whatever you want to call it, there were some things that didn't sit right with me. But overall, I kind of enjoyed it, mostly because of Leonard Snart and the 70s.
And I just adored Leonard and Sarah,
yeah,
at the bar. And that was great. And I love the 70s.
Yeah.
It was as funny in context as it was in the trailer.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, on the whole, pretty solid start to the season. They've kind of addressed in a big way the two massive issues of consent and agency that I had. So we'll see where they go from here, because they could still mess it up.
Or they could do something awesome.
Or they could do something awesome. So yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing where they go with it.
All right.
So let's move on to our movie hype from the last week. So we have, again, curated our top five headlines of the week for you. I guess the first big one is we got our first Deadpool clip, and it was absolutely hilarious. So it is obviously between Deadpool, so Wade, pre-being Deadpool, and Vanessa, his love interest. And basically it's a really, really adorable Christmas themed clip. Being like, you know, they're getting a little bit close, they're getting a little bit lovey-dovey, and you know, they get their wires crossed a little bit. She is about to ask him for a very kind of, I guess, a kinky sexual thing. And he goes to propose to her with a ring that he pulls from somewhere.
And it's she's a candy, like, ring.
It's a candy ring, which ring is pop. So Deadpool. So Wade Wilson. But it just, if this is the tone of the entire movie, it's gonna be amazing. Like, it was so on point with what I would have expected for a good adaption from the comic books that I was just incredibly impressed. And it's not a particularly long clip, but it's so good, and I'm really looking forward to being able to see the film. And I just found out that tickets are on sale, so you can go and you can order your tickets for seeing Deadpool right now, so...
Which makes sense, because it comes out in a couple weeks.
Yeah, so I'm probably gonna pre-book a ticket to go and see it as soon as I possibly can, so...
Yeah, very fun. I'm very excited for this movie.
Yeah.
And speaking of The Ring, did you see the poster of Deadpool with the ring pop that was spoofing the Green Lantern?
The Green Lantern poster, yeah.
Oh, so good.
The marketing continues to be completely on point for this entire movie. It's fantastic.
Oh, love it.
Yeah.
So, speaking of things we also love, we got some footage from Wonder Woman, which, hey, it's happening.
Yeah.
Can't take it back. There's footage.
Yeah, and it wasn't a massive amount of footage, but I think it was just enough to get the tone of what the movie's going to be like. They've switched up the setting slightly. So originally, Wonder Woman comes in around World War II. They've taken it back to World War I. Chris Pine's kind of lesbian aesthetic here is looking pretty great. It's really just his look in general. I'm really into in a weird way.
I like what the director, Patty Jenkins, says about Wonder Woman. She says, "The greatest thing about Wonder Woman is how good and kind and loving she is, yet none of that negates any of her power."
Yeah.
So, I
really like that.
Yeah.
Do you know, actually thinking about it, do you know who Chris Pine looks like in this movie so far?
Who?
Amelia Earhart. Well, he does!
That wouldn't immediately come to mind, but that's an interesting...
I mean, I'm digging the look. I am, but it just kind of puts me in mind of that. His whole aesthetic, so...
But I think our takeaway here is it's happening. They can't take it away now.
Yeah.
We're getting Wonder Woman.
Absolutely. Can't come soon enough now.
Speaking of things that are happening... to whether we're happy or not, we got a trailer for the Suicide Squad, which they must have spent a lot of money to get the rights to use Bohemian Rhapsody for this. And generally, I thought it looked pretty good, except I'm just never going to be able to take the Jared Leto's Joker seriously. I just can't do it. Never going to be able to.
It just put me in mind of, like, the emo phase that a lot of kids go through in their teenage years. Like, it kind of took on that, oh, we're so edgy kind of theme. And I just can't. Jared Leto's Joker is just a joke, basically, for me. I'm not digging it. The more that I hear about what happened behind the scenes with him, like... staying in character for, like, the whole time just makes me take him less seriously, because there are people who have played that character for far longer than he has and can get into that character without having to live it and be basically what sounds like a douche behind the scenes.
I mean, it just sounds like he's trying to exploit Heath Ledger's memory, honestly.
It just makes me really uncomfortable, all in all. I'm just not into it, and I hope we don't get too much of him in the movie, because I feel like that might ruin it for me. I'm so uninterested in his Joker. So, like, even the bit that we got in this trailer, I was like, I'm not into it, I'm not interested, I really do not care. If he is there in order to introduce Harley Quinn, then okay, fine, and then I would be perfectly content with him disappearing for the rest of the movie, so.
Yeah, I mean, I'm gonna see it.
Oh yeah.
And I think I'll enjoy most of it.
Yeah.
I liked Harley in the trailer.
Yeah.
I liked when she breaks the window and steals the bag, and it's like, we're bad guys, it's what we do.
Yeah. There's like bits, laugh. Yeah, there were beats that it kind of hit that I was like, okay, if the film is more like that, I will probably enjoy it. But, you know, there's still that kind of how they're going to be able to manage the tone of it without it veering off into territory that's a little bit insensitive to potentially some of the mental kind of disorders that some of the characters very clearly have, there is a way that they will be able to sensitively deal with that, and ways that they may be able to veer off into territory that mocks it. And I hope that, you know, for the most part, it's not done in a way that continues to stigmatize certain things. But, you know, it, for the most part, I was happy with this trailer.
All I'm saying is it better be good, because this movie is the reason we don't have the Suicide Squad on Arrow anymore.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I need it to be good, because I was really enjoying the Suicide Squad stuff on Arrow. So.
Yeah, same. Other news that we got. So basically very, very quick with this one. Black Panther officially has Ryan Coogler on to direct. So it had been rumors previously. It is now official. So he is on board. We have a director for Black Panther.
Yay! Also something that is apparently happening. So
yes. Yeah.
They can't take it away. Well, they can still take it away, but it's harder to take away now that there's a director.
Yeah, exactly. And one as acclaimed as Ryan Coogler as well. So, yeah. In news that we're not going to allow Danya to get too angry about, because we want to control the timing on this episode as much as possible, and we don't want her to rant for another hour. Doctor Strange has cast Benedict Wong as Doctor Strange's sidekick, which, on the one hand, I love Benedict Wong. I thought he was great in The Martian for as little time as he actually spent in it. But, yeah. I have some issues with the fact that they have been so resistant to having any people of color in the major roles in this movie. And then they've got a sidekick character that they think, hey, no, that's okay, we'll allow him to be a person of color because he's not a major driving force for the movie. Yeah, I have some issues with the fact that this is the direction that they're taking with it. But, you know, I like Benedict Wong. How did you feel about this casting news?
Pretty much the same way.
Yeah.
That you did, that there's, like, on the one hand, we like seeing people of color in a movie that is supposed to be about people of color.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, why are you only doing the sidekicks?
Yeah. Yeah, so I'm very mixed on this. I kind of, it just doesn't, it something about it doesn't sit right by the fact is that he's, yeah. I've already, I'm not going to go there. Okay, we're going to move on. Because I keep riling myself up about this movie, and I kind of need to be a bit more zen about it, because otherwise I'm going to, like, burst a blood vessel. And that,
like,
would
be a full, massive rant when we do our Doctor Strange special when it comes out.
Yeah, yeah. It's gonna happen, and I hope it proves me wrong, but every bit of news that comes out about this movie just keeps, I keep getting my back up about it. I'm like, no, everything so far I've disliked, and I hate the fact that I dislike it, because I love Doctor Strange in the comics. And, right, Comic Corner. We're moving on to Comic Corner, because otherwise I will continue to be really mad. So, yes, Comic Corner is back. And this week I have for you some Martian Manhunter recommendations. So, first one I've got is Martian Manhunter American Secrets. So, this is set against the backdrop of John Jones's first days on Earth. And it's a three-issue series which tackles a murder mystery in the 1950s, balanced with a retelling of Jean's origins, as well as exploring, like, the darker side of the American dream. So for anyone who loves their comics with a side serving of history, this one's for you. Next one I've got is Justice League of America Trial by Fire. So Martian Manhunter is on the front line in this Justice League series as things take a more political turn. So Jean needs to probe every mind on the planet to discover why the president is in the coma, the world's leaders are unusually agreeable, and supervillains are turning over a new leaf. It also explores the lengths he's willing to go to cure his vulnerability to fire, vastly interesting narrative choice for a well-established hero, an outcome you likely won't expect. Next one I got is DC New Frontier. And though Martian Manhunter isn't front and center in this miniseries, it's still an interesting run for him. It reimagines the beginnings of DC's Silver Age and has some great action sequences for Jean. And it also features a now famous scene where Jean changes appearance based on what he sees on television. And the last one I've got is Brightest Day. So this takes place immediately after DC's Blackest Night event. And this series saw Martian Manhunter resurrected and tasked with an unknown mission, which, upon completion, would place him back in his normal life. It explores the relationship between the green and white Martians in an incredibly interesting way. And there is an epic showdown at the end of the series.
So if you're not getting enough Jean on Supergirl, read those.
Okay, so feedback. We got some great feedback again, guys. So thank you so much for getting in touch with us. As always, if you do want to leave us feedback, you can do so via our Twitter account, which is at Hero Hype Podcast. You can leave a comment on this post when it goes up on Hypeable.com, or you can send us an email, which is HeroHypePodcast@gmail.com. But let's get into it. So, Caitlin, would you like to get Cassie's first bit of feedback?
I would love to, because I couldn't resist including Cassie's comment. So Cassie replied to our Hypeable post and said, OMG, Wynn's episode with the toy man did not endear me to him at all. I mean, I was sympathetic for a while, especially when the FBI wouldn't believe him and kept insisting that he must be working with his dad. But the ending, nope, 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 nope. I get not wanting to hide your feelings and not wanting to keep shit bottled up and not having regrets and not letting it all stew till you explode. I'm glad he told Kara his feelings, but when she was like, oh god, I'm sorry, but no, you're just my best friend, and he was like, well, that's not good enough. I don't even want to be friends with you anymore. You're just asking me to be something that I'm not. No, 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 no. Ugh, what a jerk face. I'm telling you, second season evil win for the win.
Yeah, we kind of covered this almost like verbatim word for word when we were talking about Supergirl. But yeah, we're right there with you, Cassie, seriously.
Yeah, we also asked what you guys thought about Legends of Tomorrow and got a couple of tweets in reply.
So Cassie also got back to us on this one, who says, I want to like Legends of Tomorrow, I really do, but I'm just not feeling it. Love the characters, though.
And Leah Rao said, I really enjoyed it. I thought it was a lot of fun, and I'm looking forward to more. So we got two polar opposite views on Legends.
Yeah, yeah, we really did. We also got some more thoughts on other series that have started back. So Sarah says, I'm loving season two of Agent Carter so much more than season one. There's so much intrigue.
Agreed. So good. And Wilkes is a precious cinnamon roll.
Yeah.
Cassie also commented about Supergirl, and in response to seeing the Martians, she said, I really, really, really hope we see McGann, Miss Martian, in season two of Supergirl. Super awesome girl team power up.
Yeah, agreed.
And I know Donya really wants to see McGann.
So. Yeah, I don't know if I said it on episodes previously, or have I literally been going on about that in private with you?
I can't remember, but I know you've told me many times that you really want to see her.
Yeah, well, since they introduced the Martians, I was like, oh my god, are we going to get McGann? Are we going to get McGann? We better get McGann. I really want McGann. Oh my god, can we get McGann? Like, that's literally every other word out of my mouth. And I don't know if I've been saying it on the show or if I've been, like, leaving it for when I'm, like, bombarding Caitlin with messages being like, McGann? Are we going to get McGann? That would be awesome.
Look at the Martians, we went to Mars. Are we going to get this Martian now?
Yeah. Are we there yet? Are we there yet? Are we there yet?
Exactly.
Kim also left us a comment saying, between Peggy Carter and Felicity Smoke, I have found my life's role models.
Those are good role models.
Oh, yeah.
And then US TV Addict says, I'm so glad to hear that someone else doesn't like Malcolm Merlyn. He needs to die at the hands of Nyssa. # more Tommy Merlyn. And Malcolm Merlyn is the worst. That is like our motto on this show, that Malcolm is the worst. And I think Nyssa and Sarah should kill him together. They should like kick him off a cliff and go off together in the sunset. But
yeah, that would work out really well for everyone. right. So, question of the week. So last time we asked you, what New Year's resolution should your favorite character make? And Cassie got back to us saying, for my least fave character win, stop being a jerk face and be a real friend to Kara. Haha, love you girls. Glad you're back. We're glad to be back. Honestly, we really, really are.
And amen to win.
Oh yeah, definitely. Caitlin, would you like to ask the question of the week for this week?
I would love to. So we are asking you this week, what would your main complaint about your younger self be if you traveled back in time and met him or her? Obviously inspired by Dr. Martin Stein meeting Marty, his marijuana smoking, flirting with Sarah, arrogant younger self.
Which was fantastic. Absolutely loved it. But yeah, guys, as always, like, tweet us, leave it in a comment, or email us. So we would love to hear your thoughts. And we will be back next week. And again, guys, if you have any feedback about the new format, please let us know. We hope you like it. We did spend a lot of time deliberating over it. So again,
but we are still open to tweaking if necessary.
Yes, we absolutely are. So until next week, guys, I'm Danya.
And I'm Caitlin.
And yeah, hope you enjoy all the shows next week, guys. Bye.
Bye.